the other day. So I just had a crazy schedule.
But what does that mean? Hmm. What might be happening next class? Who knows?
Any questions about anything we covered last class?
I'd like to file for an adjudication of what editor is about to happen next class.
Make sure you file those motions properly.
All right. Yes.
The lecture for last class, that's going to be posted on the...
Yes, I have literally spent 5 minutes in my office in the last 48 hours. But guess what I'm doing as soon as we're done? I actually get to go home, so it's going to be nice. Yes, I will post it then. All right, so...
Any other questions?
All right, cool. All right, so what we need to do today is we need to finish the concept of venue so we can kind of understand what the heck we're talking about when we talk about going to court. Because it's really not a court, it's actually courts, plural. And then we might start going forward with our concept of liability. The first major area of law that we're going to talk about is personal liability. So, if hypothetically I was to give you a quiz today and I was to ask you what are the 5 criteria to sue, what would the answer to that be? What's the first thing you got to have?
Standard.
What does that mean?
Identify defendant and actual harm by the defendant.
So the plaintiff has to know who hurt them and what happened to them. All right. Once, if the person has standing, what also must be present?
The issue must be justiciable.
Justiciable. What does justiciability mean?
Like the court must be able to do something about it.
Yeah, the court has to be able to do something about it. If the court has no legal jurisdiction or power over the subject matter that's at the heart of your claim, the court can't do anything about it. So the court will say sorry. So, best analogy I can give you is if you were to come to me and say, Lemanic, I need a cake. Can you bake it for me tomorrow? And you know what I'm going to say? I don't even know how to turn on the oven.
So I couldn't help you.
Same thing with justiciability. But what about the issue at the heart of the case? There's also 2 parameters around it. Even if the issue is justiciable.
It must be right.
What does that mean? It must be right.
It must at least be provable correct.
So it has to kind of be real. It has to be ready to go. But what can it not be?
Not 5 years.
Listen. What must it not be?
Move.
Hey, there you go. Nothing like getting a lifeline. What does that mean? Move.
It can't be as like really like maybe more like 30 years.
Yeah, it can't be. No. No. In the future, that goes to ripeness. But what happens when you cease to be? You're dead, right. So the issue essentially, that's what move means. It means it can't be dead. Whoever it is must still be here, and legally, the time must not have run. Okay, good. And last but not least, if the 4 things are present, where must you go?
Proper
venue. You have to make sure you file your claim in the court that has jurisdiction over the subject matter.
Oh, you gotta let all my dirty laundry out? Thanks, bud. I can see how tight we are here. Yeah. All right. Reed came in. Who also has come in? I got you. All right, I think we're in good shape.
All right. For the guys that came in, there was tutoring came in. So I'm suggesting not necessarily you need to go to tutoring, but if you think you may need some help, it's not a bad
one. All right. Good, 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 good. Now, here's the thing. In the United States, we just don't have a venue. Like I said, we have multiple venues. And making things complicated, we actually have two completely separate, unrelated court systems that are tiered, meaning there are layers. Why? Why do we have two separate court systems?
Some cases are like more important than others.
No.
Federal law versus state law.
Ah. By the way, September 17th is Constitution Day. So this is the day in which all patriotic Americans should celebrate the greatest system of government ever devised by man and put down on paper. Of course, the irony is it's not perfect, but no one's figured out anything better yet. In our constitutional system of government, what the Founding Fathers gave to us was what is commonly referred to as federalism. We just don't have a government. We actually have the powers of government shared between a national government. But there are also 50 sovereign states that have governments. And each of the 50 sovereign states are comprised of municipalities, thousands of cities and towns. And each governmental entity has its own area of authority. Now, fortunately, because it would just be out of control, the local governments cannot make law that impacts other people in other communities. So, as a result of that, towns are not allowed to have their own courts. But the states that oversee the municipalities, as well as the United States government, can. So, because each, the federal government and the state governments, can make their own laws, constitutionally speaking, they're allowed to adjudicate conflicts that arise under those laws. In other words, they're allowed to have their own court systems. All right, I did the why too. Now, here is the thing. They are subdivided, both of them, into three tiers. And, in terms of shapes, they kind of work if you visualize it like a triangle. This is the U.S. government federal court system. Down on the bottom level are what are generally referred to as the trial courts. The trial courts. Now, the technical phrase for the trial courts, the vast majority of them that handle criminal and civil cases, are called district courts. And in the United States, there are currently 93 district courts spread out across the countries and in the territories. Massachusetts has two. There is a federal court in Boston, and there is a federal court in Worcester. These district courts literally have the trials in them. So judge, jury, plaintiff, defendant, presentation of evidence, etc. But there are also, as created by Congress, a whole slew of other, what we can easily remember as specialty courts. To be really technical, these specialty courts are courts of limited jurisdiction. Meaning they're created usually for a single purpose. So for instance, bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is a federal question. And Congress, a long time ago, created special bankruptcy courts that only handle bankruptcies. So going back to our criteria, if you got an fender-bender and you were looking to sue, filing your claim in bankruptcy court would not be the proper venue. Now your book does go into some detail. You don't have to remember any of the specialty courts. The only thing you just need to remember is that they're there. And they're trial courts. So there's like admiralty courts. There's the court of military justice. I don't know. This is just like a whole bunch of them. Under our Constitution, you have a right to a trial. So if you have standing, and the issue is justiciable, and it's ripe, not moot, and so long as you file in the right court, you can have your day in court. Doesn't mean you're going to win. Remember, we talked about justice last class. Justice doesn't mean you're winning. Justice just means you have a chance to present your case. Well, what happens if something goes wrong in that trial? That the judge does not instruct the jury on the proper definition of the law? Or what happens if hearsay testimony is allowed in, which is not allowed under the evidentiary rules of the federal court system? Hearsay? An out-of-court statement not said by the person who's testifying? Well, that could contaminate the outcome. That's an error. Well, if you feel you are victimized by an error, you do not have the right, but you can attempt to file for an appeal. The first rung in opportunity to get an appeal are known as circuit courts. Because the United States is so big, they've regionalized the appellate courts. So they literally, the judges travel around the circuit. So Massachusetts is part of the first circuit court, which includes all of New England, New York, and I think Puerto Rico is in the first circuit court. So if you were to file an appeal out of any of the district courts within that district, you would go before this court if the appeals court feels that it wants to hear your claim. It's their choice, not yours. So if your appeal is denied, that just means the appeals judges feel that the court did not make a mistake. The trial court, that is. Well, what happens if the 12 circuit courts, any of them, maintained the error? Or maybe they made a decision that was wrong? You might be able to go up to the tippity top of the mountain. The SCOTUS. The Supreme Court
of the United States. SCOTUS. Now here is the catch. There are annually about 2 million cases filed in the federal courts, trial courts. Of those, maybe 7,000 get an appeal. And of those 7,000 out of that 1.9 to 2 million cases filed, guess how many cases the Supreme Court chooses to hear? On any given year, it's about 70. So, while you have an absolute right to a trial, you do not have an absolute right to an appeal. And chances of getting to the top of the mountain, about the same as winning Powerball. Good luck with that. But there's a reason. There's a reason. It's very rare that the errors are not caught by the circuit. Question so far. All right. What happens during an appeal? Well, does anybody know? First and foremost, I want you to put this in your notes, not a retrial. If you are granted an appeal, this is not a mulligan. The appeals court does not look at the evidence, doesn't hear testimony from witnesses, there's no jury. Rather, it's a review by a panel. Kind of like how I described arbitration. Typically, there are three appeals court judges that preside. The parties, through their attorneys, present their claim. The parties, through their lawyers. So like if you were filing for an appeal, you would never go before the appeals court. It would be your attorneys. And of course, how is this done? Well, you are going to file a legal document before it's reviewed because it has to be considered. And in it, you are going to specifically point out what and where is the error that denied you justice. Was it an illegal, not illegal, was it a legal error? Meaning, did the judge apply the wrong law? Or is it a procedural error? Again, the most common procedural error is the court allows in contaminated evidence. So any of you criminal justice majors? Fruit of a poisonous tree? Did you learn about that doctrine yet?
No.
fruit with a poisonous tree? What is it? You say yeah?
Oh, yeah. If the evidence was contaminated in some way, like if it was obtained in a way that violated the person's rights, like if they made statements that the person made before they were read the Miranda rights, or if evidence was seized when the seizure wasn't justified or the search wasn't constitutionally justified, you have to toss the evidence off.
Yeah, like, so say the cop breaks into your house and searches your house without a warrant. Even if the cop finds a big pile of cocaine in a whole bathtub full of guns, that evidence is not going to come in against you because it was illegally obtained. That's known as fruit of the poisonous tree. Court was wrong, I mean the police was wrong for not getting a warrant. That's the poisonous tree, and the fruit is anything that's found therein. Well, what happens if that evidence was allowed in? Well, the attorney for the person wrongfully found guilty based on that bad evidence would say, hey, yo, look, they're not following the rules of procedure. So before the hearing, the appeals court will look at the claim and simply decide whether or not it thinks the claim is justified, valid.
So you can't figure all of that out or like address that during the initial trial, or you have to wait until it's over?
You have to basically object to what is taking place. And that objection has to be recorded. So the objection must come during the trial. And the judge must not remedy it, the trial judge. So if you object saying, hey, this is illegally obtained evidence, and basically the judge ignores you, and then allows the jury to consider it, there's your grounds for the appeal.
Yes, so that agreement, isn't it called the writ of certiorari? Something like that?
The writ of certiorari is an order from the court above to send all of the evidence up. I'm going to get to that. I'm just not there yet. Other questions? All right. So, you're going to file your claim. The appeals court's going to read the claim, and they're going to basically decide, do we want to hear this or not? Well, let's say they do, then they'll issue the writ. Writ of, I'm going to spell this wrong. Rory. That's wrong. That's completely wrong. I got to have it in here somewhere. Writ of certiorari. SCOTUS. Oh, you know why? I took all that complicated technical stuff off. You got it on Google? All right, so how bad was I?
Pretty bad.
Wicked bad. Wicked bad. Oh, yeah, let me see. C-E-R, well, awful. There we go. Certiorari. There we go. Writ of certiorari. So a writ of certiorari is an order by the appeals court to the trial court to basically send up all the documentation. Because, of course, the appeals court wants to see with its own eyes what is in the record. Well, here's the thing. If you are claiming the court allowed for contaminated evidence and there was no objection, do you think you're going to get your appeal? No. Because, again, you don't get an appeal because you lost. You only get an appeal if something's actually wrong. All right. Questions? All right. So then what happens? Well, very simple. Parties are represented before the panel by their attorneys. They appear before, and each side has typically 1 hour. P appeals court questions. Both sides. Three judges, attorney. The three judges usually begin with the party bringing the appeal. And they ask questions based upon their legal claim. They're not going to ask who was the woman who presented testimony, unless that is related to the error. Again, it's not a retrial. All they are going to do is focus on just the error. By the way, these are commonly referred to as oral arguments. Once the party bringing the appeal gets their hour of questioning, the panel then subjects the party claiming, no, the court got it right. They're going to get subjected to an hour of questioning. Once both sides have their questioning, the court then deliberates. The lawyers go home. A month, 2 months, 3 months, whenever they have a chance to, they will then go on and issue their decision. And there's going to be typically one of three things that occurs. The appeals court is going to affirm the decision below. Affirmation. Yep, they got it right. There was no error. Or they're going to reverse. The winner down below now becomes the loser. Because the only reason why he or she won was because of the error. Well, we've eliminated the error and it's going to get a different outcome. And the third possibility is what's known as a remand. A remand is where the appeals court sends it back down to the trial court with a determination on how to fix the error.
So if it's a reversal and I was originally guilty, would it change to not guilty?
Correct.
Would that mean a retrial?
That means you potentially could be still found guilty if, say, the evidentiary rules were followed more precisely.
Would that lead to a mistrial potentially? And a retrial? Or was it judge? Or were they just...
It could result in a retrial. Or sometimes, now here's the weird thing, I really don't want to get this technical, but sometimes the trial judge will allow the party to make the appeal before the trial is finished. Because the trial judge is uncertain. In other words, there's something so wonky going on before the trial court allows a decision to be made, which could result in...
So if during, like, discovery, evidence is put in, and it's obvious that the evidence is legitimate, you can try to...
Well, no, there's no way... We'll put it this way. There's no way to prove that it's not illegitimate. So let's keep it real simple. Let's say an AI-generated photograph. Wow, it really looks like the person, but we can't prove chain of custody. So we don't know who actually took the picture, we don't know when the picture was taken, we don't know where it was coming from. But it sure as hell looks like a picture doing the crime. I mean, the person doing the crime. Well, there's no rules on how to authenticate it. What should we do? So they'll ask the appeals court, how should we handle this? And the appeals court made a decision, remand it back down, says to get rid of it. Just an easy example.
Same. Say if the jury determined the verdict in trial court, could you still appeal that? Or is it only if the judge comes up with the decision?
The only time you can appeal the decision by the jury is if the decision by the jury was wrong because of incorrect use of law or procedure.
If it gets remanded, is it going to be the same, like, is it still a jury?
It depends. Okay. It depends on whether or not it was taken up in an expedited manner. So, like, if you're going to put an appeal up and the appeals court's not going to get to it for 6 months, they're not going to hold that jury.
Right.
So they'll let that jury go home, then they'll impanel another jury just to handle that one part of the trial.
So they get briefed on everything that happens.
Correct. Correct. All right. Any other questions? All right, you ready for the best part? If you wrote all this down, guess what happens if you appeal an appeal and the Supreme Court accepts it? Everything I just wrote on the board.
Except instead of it being a panel of three judges, you have all nine justices presiding over.
I like it when I can get two wins with one writing. Questions?
All right. Oh, look at that. Oh, wow. Ooh.
I should have done that flow chart. We got that all set.
How long did it take you to get the text going up like that?
That's just PowerPoint, yeah. Yeah, I try. I try.
That sounds good.
Actually, the funny thing is I think I did this back in like 2020. So it's not even something current. I'm sure now, like, it could be animated and it could be like three dimensions, but yeah, whatever. All right, so can you have a trial in the Supreme Court? Does anybody know? Can you have a trial in the Supreme Court? The answer is, it depends. In Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, it clearly states that the primary function of the Supreme Court is to serve as the highest appellate court in the land. Meaning, if you appeal an appeal, can you do another appeal? No. Supreme Court is the absolute last stop. Now, here is the politically controversial aspect of that. This means when the nine justices make a decision, they're making law. And there's only two ways to get around a Supreme Court decision. Does anybody know?
Another case.
So let's say another case gets up to the Supreme Court dealing with the same subject matter. What can the Supreme Court do to itself?
Make a different decision.
Yeah, the Supreme Court can reverse itself. Abortion. That's the easiest example because that was controversial, although I think a lot of people have actually finally figured out the way our system is supposed to work. So back when Roe v. Wade was decided, by the way, there's a brilliant movie that was released a couple of years ago, and you have the ability to actually see that was one of the most corrupt decisions ever made by the U.S. Supreme Court. Because like three of the justices that decided there is something in the U.S. Constitution that pertains to abortion, all of them were on the dole. They were all getting money from health insurance companies. I think one of the justices' wife actually worked in an abortion clinic. So, I mean, you want to talk about ethics, holy cow. But anyways, in that decision, which was 7-2, the Supreme Court said, yes, in the Constitution, there is a provision that allows for a national standard for abortion. Well, it took 50-odd years, but a few years back, the Supreme Court had a similar case come up, and the Supreme Court actually said no. The previous court got it wrong. Because where in the Constitution is there an article or a clause that says anything dealing with abortion? It doesn't. Abortion is a healthcare matter. And guess what level of government is authorized legally and constitutionally to deal with matters of healthcare? The states. So the Supreme Court did not declare abortion to be unconstitutional. They would not do that. They don't have that ability. All they simply said is it's a state matter. I'll give you another one. Plessy v. Ferguson. Anyone know what the U.S. Supreme Court decided in Plessy v. Ferguson, which was like 1887 or something like that? Any of you ever hear of the concept of separate but equal? The Supreme Court in 1887, as the law of the land, said you can separate people based on race. Segregation. So long as both have equal access. So you could have a white school, you could have a black school. You could have a white park, you could have a black park. You could have a white church, you could have a black church. Well, actually, churches are private, so that would not be applicable. Government stuff. Well, that was the law of the land for like 80 years. Until Brown versus the Board of Education. And the Supreme Court reversed itself and said, no! Because you know what was happening in those quote-unquote separate but equal facilities? Where do you think all the broken desks were going? Where do you think all the beat-up, used, out-of-date books were going? Yeah, sure, all of the black kids had schools to go to, but they definitely were not equal. So the Supreme Court struck down precedent and said no, and reversed itself. That's the most common. And by the way, you know how many major cases the Supreme Court overturns on itself? Very, very, very few. But when they do, it's a big thing. What's the other way? Anybody know? So the Supreme Court is trusted with defining the meaning of the Constitution. In other words, they determine what is constitutional and what is not.
So, where would you, like, how would you, like, rank their power to like, the president? Like, do they have more power than the president?
Co-equal. Because they have different responsibility. But I can tell you one thing. An individual justice has a larger impact on American society than an individual president. Because what is the maximum a president can serve? What is the maximum a justice on the Supreme Court can serve? Life. All right, getting back to my question. What's the other way to get around a Supreme Court decision? Love being a history professor, as well as a legal nerd. Here we go. Dred Scott v. Sanford. Oh, cut the shit. They don't teach you anything anymore. Does anybody know what decision was involved in Dred Scott v. Sanford? The Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of slavery because slavery, as it existed, had nothing to do with the fact that said slave was a human being. How were slaves treated under the law? No, property. And guess what it says in the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution? You cannot be denied of your property without due process of law. In other words, the government is legally obligated to protect your property. Buchanan, I think? James Buchanan? Now, Dred Scott, by the way, I really want to go into it. We'll just say that he was a slave that was in a slave state, but he was moved to a free state for a little bit, and then went back to the slave state. And he tried filing a claim basically saying, look, I was a slave when I was in the slave state, but the moment I went into the free state, where slavery was illegal, I became free. And he argued, once free, forever free. And the Supreme Court said, not too bad, you're proper. How was that decision overturned? Now, that, by the way, really did nothing.
Oh, okay.
Anybody know? Can you own a slave now?
No.
Why not?
Civil
rights act. No, I had nothing to do with that.
Didn't the state start individually deciding?
Nope. Why can you not own slaves? Constitution Day! You're killing me! No! The 13th Amendment. They amended the Constitution and specifically made it illegal to own a human being. So they changed the definition of property. So, one way to get around a Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court overturns itself. The other way, you literally change the Constitution.
What does that have to do with that, what we were just talking about? I don't know, but it's a good lesson on Constitution Day.
All right, appellate jurisdiction. You could appeal up to the Supreme Court if the Supreme Court wants to hear it. But, you could also have a trial in which the justices hold a bench trial, meaning they are the judges and the jury. And there are lawyers, and there's presentation of evidence, and there are witnesses.
It falls under what's known as original jurisdiction. Article 3, Section 1, Clause 2, states that any case, and I quote, affecting ambassadors or other public ministers and consuls, and which a state shall be a party,
shall have their trial before the Supreme Court.
So here's a famous case. Rhode Island versus Massachusetts. 1838.
Rhode Island sued the Commonwealth of Massachusetts over a border dispute because of ambiguity, the vagueness of all of the written documents that defined the northern border of Rhode Island, and I guess the southern border of Massachusetts. But if you look at a map, you know, Massachusetts kind of has a straight line, and then it gets kind of wonky as it begins going down near Plymouth. Well, all of those little zigzags, there is no border drawn on the ground if you were to go to that part of the state. Some of the boundary actually went through people's properties. Some of the towns technically straddled both states. Well, where should they go?
Well, rather than going to war, which, by the way, Massachusetts and Rhode Island actually did during the colonial period. Rhode Island petitioned the Supreme Court and said, hey, look, Supreme Court, can you make this decision for us? And lo and behold, the Supreme Court did. The Supreme Court dug up evidence that went back to 1709, in which King... Was it Queen Anne? No. King George I had granted to Rhode Island a clear border. Because the question was asked in 1709 by Rhode Island, hey, look, Massachusetts is being a bunch of thugs. They're trying to tax our people. Your Majesty, can you settle this? And the king actually drew a straight line across the border. And guess what the Supreme Court enforced? A decision made by the king. Because that was the best evidence to settle the dispute. More recently, there was a huge trial that took place when Georgia sued Tennessee. This was about 10 years ago because the area was suffering from a bad drought and the city of Atlanta had like a 5-day supply of water left. Because how does most of Tennessee get its power? Any of you ever learned about the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Association? It's a series of dams that generate hydroelectricity. So to make sure the people of Tennessee could get enough power, they were throttling the flow of water downstream. And the consequence is the city of Atlanta almost ran out of water. Well, the Supreme Court ruled that TVA could not intentionally deprive the flow of water, which could potentially result in death in Atlanta. Just giving you examples. Questions? All right. Federal jurisdiction. What's going to determine if you go into the federal courts as opposed to the state? Well, first and foremost, it has to be a federal question. Meaning, whatever the issue is, must be related to federal law or the U.S. Constitution or maybe a treaty signed by the United States. That is a federal question. Constitution, U.S. law, treaties. Or, oh, I'm going to get you on this one. Or, it could be a matter that involves diversity of citizenship. Anyone have any idea what this means? What this is referring to? Anyone want to take a crack at it?
Trying foreign nationals to find some new water here.
Say it loud.
Trying foreign nationals for crimes committed while they were here.
Trying foreign nationals for crimes that they committed here.
Immigration.
Other possibilities. Both wrong. Well, that's kind of true, too, yeah. If you are a citizen, you are... Well, that's not true. You could be an immigrant, but you legally went through the process and became a citizen. Any other cracks in the bat? Or swings at the ball, rather, cracks in the ball. You're not going to crack the bat, unless you hit it just right. Although, with those aluminum composite bats, it's really hard to do. There was nothing worse. When I was a kid, we used to use wooden bats all the time, and if there was a little hairline crack on it, you'd get like the stinger. Diversity of citizenship. Who originally, prior to the ratification of the 14th Amendment,
who originally had full control over citizenship? What level of government? It was the states. The states originally had the rules over citizenship. One of the hardest states to get into was Massachusetts. Because Massachusetts generally would not let you in, A, unless you were a Christian. And you could prove it. Preferably not a papist. Massachusetts did not want Catholics in the Commonwealth. Because Massachusetts was controlled by the Congregationalists, which were Puritans. And they were okay with Baptists as well. But those papists, the people who go to Catholic Church and follow the rules of the Pope, no, none of them. Also, Massachusetts, you would not be allowed in unless you could provably show you could converse in English. Didn't have to be the king's English. But you had to be able to read and write in English. And lastly, somebody in Massachusetts had to verify your identity. So if you didn't have a friend here, or a family member, forget about it. You're not coming in. New York, on the other hand, so long as you didn't have any disease when you got off the boat, New York pretty much would let you in, so long as the ship captain paid the right fees. Diversity of citizenship was contemplated when the Constitution was ratified. Because what happens if a citizen of one state has a civil dispute with a citizen of another state? Here's my hypothetical. You, being a citizen of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, decides to get a jump on leaf peeping because fall is upon us. So you decide to drive up north of the border and enter into Vermont, where the colors are just starting to pop. Well, while leaf popping, you get distracted on the side of the road because there's a moose. And it's just not a moose, it's a big-ass moose. And you're like, whoa, dude! And of course, you're a stupid Massachusetts driver. You start screwing around, you look for your phone. It's because you're going to take a selfie while driving with the moose in the background. Well, while you're doing that, it just so happens that there's a New Yorker coming down the road the other way doing the same damn thing. And boom! You have a head-on collision. You claim you are the victim! Where are you going to file your case? Vermont. Why are you going to file in Vermont?
That's what happened.
Well, you know what that means? That means you're going to have to go hire an attorney from Vermont, and you're going to have to incur the expense of frequently traveling up to Vermont to proceed with the trial. And by the way, does Vermont have any jurisdiction over the person from New York? No, not at all. Vermont cannot send out the Vermont Marshals and go drag his ass back to Vermont. So where are you going to go? Why federal court? The framers realized that in the cases of civil disputes between citizens of different states, that the federal courts would be a proper venue because the federal courts have jurisdiction over the United States. So could they have control over a hit and run or a car accident in Vermont? Yes. Why? Where is Vermont located? What country? All right, and the fact that you're a masshole. Does the federal court have jurisdictional authority over you? What about the guy from New York? Absolutely.
So,
diversity of citizenship is a civil case in which the parties come from different states. So one of the key components of diversity of citizenship is the parties must be in different states. Because what happens if it was a Massachusetts guy that got in an accident with another Massachusetts person? Even if it happened in Vermont, you could file it in Massachusetts if you wanted to. Well, no, there's one other criteria that's going to make it a federal case. So one, it has to be parties from different states. And two, this is because of law, federal statute. The current minimum claim today is $75,000 or more. $75,000 or more.
So if you would have bring like this, there was a person from Massachusetts, two people from Massachusetts, and you go to court in Massachusetts, and you don't get the result that you wanted, would you end up going to, could you file it in?
No, that would be double jeopardy. You only get one crack at it. Other questions? All right, so if you're going to get in here, it has to be based on one of two things. To go up the ladder, it must be based on an error. You have an absolute right to a trial, but you do not have a right to an appeal. It's up to the appeals court if they want to hear it. And the same is with the Supreme Court. And if you don't like the decision by a Supreme Court, too bad. Because the only way it's going to get reversed is if the similar case comes back up and the Supreme Court reverses itself, or you can convince 3/4 of both chambers of Congress to propose an amendment. No, sorry, 2/3, apologies, 2/3 of the membership of both chambers of Congress to propose an amendment, and then the governments in 3/4 of the states to ratify it. So in other words, our odds are not on your side. No. If the law changes after the fact, you cannot appeal. But, say you're incarcerated because you, by the way, this happened very frequently. Say you were incarcerated because you were in possession of an ounce of marijuana. Well, the moment it was decriminalized, all of the people that were in Massachusetts jails because of that offense appealed to the governor, and the governor commuted their sentences. All right. We probably don't have enough time to get through this, but I'll whip through it as quick as I can because it's almost the exact same. The other tier are the states. And by the way, every single state is slightly different. So I'm going to give you the system that we have in Massachusetts. So like the federal court system, there are 3 major tiers. There's the trial courts, there's the appeals, and then there's the high court, which in Massachusetts is the Supreme Judicial Court, the SJC. But our trial courts are also tiered. At the lowest level, there are specialty courts. For instance, small claims court. If you want to sue your neighbor for an amount less than $7,500, you would go to a local courthouse and file a small claims. Your hearing will be before a judge magistrate, not a judge, and there will be no jury. Bless you. There are also all of those courts that I talked about if you go into the Worcester courthouse. There's probate, there's land court, there's yada, yada, yada. You don't have to remember them all, just remember they're specialty courts. As far as major trial courts, we have a lower court and an upper court. It has nothing to do with different buildings. You can go into the Worcester Courthouse. And down on the bottom floor, there are three major courtrooms. Two of them could be having a trial involving the district court. And the one right next door could be the Superior Court. What's the difference? The significance of the subject matter. If you are going to sue someone civilly for $35,000 or less, or it's a criminal trial where the maximum penalty is less than 5 years, you're going to go before a district court. You're going to walk in. You're going to see the judge. You'll have the court officers. You'll have both sets of attorneys, prosecution, criminal defendant, jury. The same thing you would see if you had a Superior Court trial, where the maximum penalty for a criminal case is more than 5 years. Or if it's a civil trial, you're looking for more than $35,000. What's the difference? The experience of the judge. Newer judges sit at the district court level. They hear the simpler cases. More experienced judges sit at the Superior Court level because the cases are more complex. So here you go. Karen Reed trial. That was a sitting of the Superior Court. Because she was basically being charged with vehicular manslaughter. Did she do it? Don't know. But you know what I do know? They couldn't prove it. The Supreme Judicial Court. That's our high court. All right, because time is fleeting. Everything that I said going from the federal district courts up to the circuit courts is the same. You have an absolute right to a trial. You do not have an absolute right to an appeal. It's up to the discretion of the Court of Appeals whether or not they're going to hear the case. In order for them to hear the case, there must be an error, and it must be based on the implication of the law or some type of procedural violation. You'll go before a panel. Both sides, during oral arguments, will present their basis of their claim. The appeals court will deliberate, and they'll either affirm, reverse, or remain. Now, here is something very interesting. There is no appeals court building. The appeals court operates simultaneously throughout the Commonwealth. There's about 40 or 50 judges that are part of the Court of Appeals. And they hold hearings wherever they can get a room. So when I was in law school, my 3.5 years that I was there, I got to see two sittings of the appeals court. Because they commonly go to law schools. And it was real interesting. You couldn't say anything, you'd be arrested. But you were allowed to go sit in there because we had a moot court space, and you could just sit in the back and you just kind of watch what happens. But here is an interesting kicker. In most matters, the Massachusetts Court of Appeals is the final venue. So, if you think there was an error, and it gets up to the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals decision is final. If there is a constitutional question, it goes up to the SJC. So, if it's an instance of fruit of the poisonous tree, be hard to argue, well, that would be a violation of due process. So that would actually be grounds for it to get up to the SJC. But if the court below imposed an excessive fine, that might not be a constitutional matter.
Is that frequent?
No. No. All right, what do we got to click? All right, so there's the arrow. Woo, there's the jurisdiction. All right. Primary jurisdiction of the Supreme Judicial Court is to hear an appeal. But again, like I said, has to be constitutional in nature. Has to be constitutional in nature. But, unlike the United States Supreme Court, our Constitution actually gives authority to the SJC to issue legal opinions to the governor and our state legislature. This is something peculiar to Massachusetts. John Adams, who wrote the Constitution, was a lawyer, and he felt that if you're going to be a justice on the SJC, you are most learned in the law. And the best way to avoid a violation of the Constitution would be to allow the legislature, when it's making the law, to ask the question, is this law constitutional? In advance. Well, the SJC, if questioned, will render a decision. So the hope is, every law that gets passed, the question has been asked, therefore, it is constitutional. At the U.S. level, it's not. Now, does that mean that the SJC does not use judicial review and declare laws to be unconstitutional? No, they will do it. But odds are, if the SJC rendered a ruling previously, they won't. And to finish up, mindful of the time, state court jurisdiction. Anything dealing with state law or the state constitution. State courts also have authority over local disputes. So if you got a speeding ticket that was issued by a local police officer, you would file the claim in the state court. If you died and you wanted to get your will probated, actually it wouldn't be you, it would be your heirs, they would go to a state court. If, you were a child who, while during high school, was denied equal access to education, education is a state matter, you go to a state court. Or if it's like a common law crime, so the raping, and the murdering, and the burning, you would be going to a state court.
What about bankruptcy?
Bankruptcy is a federal court matter. I think you talked about that already. There are no state bankruptcy. No state is allowed any jurisdiction over the issue of bankruptcy. That is purely a federal matter. That's in Article 1, Section 3 somewhere.
In all these courts, do they all have like their own judges?
Yes. So a judge is a judge is a judge. but the SJC assigns judges to sit in particular courts. So you could potentially, say, go to juvenile court, and you could be dealing with a first-time judge. And why do they put them there? Well, the juvie cases are sometimes the easiest. So the judge is going to be able to cut their teeth. But maybe after a year they did such a good job, the SJC promotes the judge from juvie to go sit in the district court. Other questions? But I gotta warn you, there are instances of concurrent jurisdiction. These are situations where something happens in a state, and that incident could apply to both a federal question or a state question. So let's say you go into a class, not this one, of course, but another class, and the professor fails you because that professor doesn't like the way you look. Well, in a U.S. the Massachusetts Constitution, there is an equal protection clause that basically requires all people to be treated equally under the law. Failing someone because they are just dumb, that's fine. That happens frequently. But failing someone because you don't like the way they look, that's egregious. But there's also federal law on that as well. So which venue would you file a claim in? Well, ultimately, whichever one was the most convenient. So state courts can hear federal questions, so long as there's overlap. But I'll give you an example of where there is no overlap. The Marathon bomber, Dzhokhar Dzhonaev. They set off a bunch of those pressure cooker bombs, killed four people, including a child. That act, under state law, is a homicide. The intentional killing of another person with malice aforethought. They could be prosecuted for murder. Why is Joe Carr in a federal penitentiary? He was tried also under a terrorist statute. Massachusetts doesn't have the authority to try terrorist cases. That's a federal question. So that's not a concurrent overlap. And by the way, the reason why Mitt Romney, I think was the governor at the time, allowed the United States government to take the first trial was because Massachusetts does not allow the death penalty for any criminal activity. So the best way to make sure that he goes kaput was to allow the federal government to handle the case. Last but not least, state court could hear a diversity claim. So you get in an accident in another state. You could file it in Vermont if you wanted to, or you could potentially file it in Massachusetts. Why? Again, it would be more convenient for you. All right, questions? All right, so we went through the different tiers. We generally understand venue. We kind of understand the process. When we come back on Monday, we're going to begin the process of civil litigation. And we're going to start contemplating the concept of liability. When am I responsible to prevent harm to another? Have a lovely weekend.